You're listening to Cross Currents from KALW News. I'm Hannah Baba. Now, if we go up the coast, we'll find Baker Beach. That is where Burning Man first started back in 1986. It started small and grew exponentially over the next decade. 1996 was a turning point. By this time, attendance was around 8,000. Two people were run over in their tents, and another person died in a head-on collision during pre-event building. The event takes place on federal land in Nevada's Black Rock Desert, and the Bureau of Land Management didn't renew the permit. It all could have ended there. Instead, organizers moved the event temporarily to private land and tried to tame the chaos with a bunch of new rules and a grid of new roads. But there was one key person missing, co-founder John Law. He knew Burning Man couldn't continue as it was, but he chafed at the taming of the event that he helped start, so he walked away. As part of our ongoing series, The Intersection at Burning Man, KALW's managing editor David Boyer sat down with John to talk about the origins of the event and how it fits into the larger history of counterculture in the Bay Area.
They turn the Melvins off.
Yeah.
All right. Hey.
Hi.
How you doing?
Good to really good to meet you.
Likewise. KALW, always doing good work.
Yeah.
You know, let's get you comfortable. I can put, there's a chair.
Okay.
Which, right here. It'll be a little cramped.
It's okay. You don't mind?
Yeah.
You don't mind? I don't mind.
So
I'm going to start with a story.
Oh, very good.
So for me, the story starts in 96. Because I went out there, had no idea what I was going to.
Yeah, that's the best.
The whole experience felt like, oh, this is what it is. I didn't know anything that was going on.
And I think by then it was doubling in size every year. And I knew we were headed for a disaster. There's no way around it. I mean, I knew there were going to be 10,000 people there that year. 95 was real close. I mean, you know, there were a couple of minor injuries. Nobody got killed. But it was obvious. And we had to get a bigger, we had to be more controlling. We had to be have more cops, more accountants, more this, more that. And we didn't. You know, we had very little money and very little resources. And honestly, some people involved in organizing the event weren't that worried about that, you know. And other people, you know, just wanted to build it in any way, shape, or form. There are a couple other people involved, Larry primarily, who wanted to grow the event regardless. I mean, no matter what. Grow.
He's talking about co-founder Larry Harvey, who's the person most associated with Burning Man.
I kept saying, like, we shouldn't be advertising it. We should be like, not to keep people from coming, just to keep let it grow more organically.
Back in 96, there were no addresses, no alphabet of streets in concentric circles around the man. There was just a center camp where, like now, you couldn't buy much more than coffee and ice.
So there was that schism between freedom, anarchy, and control. And, you know, I find control boring. Control won out because it just does.
To say he found control boring is an understatement. Before Burning Man, John spent more than a decade at the center of the Bay Area's underground anarchist culture.
I don't feel particularly exceptional. I feel like I fell down a rabbit hole in 1976, and I just feel like I was lucky in the right place, right time, with a bad attitude. Because when I came here at 17 in 1976 looking for the party, and all the toothless hippie drug addicts told me the party was over, and I just went on and did what I was doing and met all these other people, we made our own party.
That party began with the Suicide Club, a secret society that was one of the first extreme urban exploration groups.
Going in a sewer is pretty cool, you know, to me. Climbing a bridge is pretty cool. For the first year of the Suicide Club, we go in a sewer, we'd climb a Golden Gate Bridge, we'd go sledding down the letters of South San Francisco, we'd do something really weird, and then like at 2 in the morning or at dawn, we'd pick up our lunch pails and go, okay, see you next time, pal.
The party continued with the Cacophony Society, another underground social group that made an art of transgression and trespassing. But this one was a little less secret.
So there were a bunch of articles about Cacophony. What would happen, like, we'd have an article in the Examiner or the Chronicle or something, and 10 or 20 new people would show up at our monthly meeting, like at Edinburgh Castle or Tommy's Joint or something. Then they'd come on some event, and like, out of those 10 people, like, 9 of them would go running away in abject horror. That was kind of how you separate the wheat from the chaff or whatever.
Both Cacophony and Suicide Club were progenitors of Burning Man and part of the rich, underground, countercultural history of the Bay Area. What I'm hoping to get at is the philosophical underpinnings of it.
Well, the philosophical underpinnings of Burning Man, the beach event was basically a bonfire with a bunch of people drinking beer. First on the desert, there were 70 people. And so it's this weird thing, like people think it was some like magical, mystical, amazing. I mean, it was cool, but we didn't have much infrastructure. And we knew that it was a place where we could, was total freedom. We could do whatever we wanted to. And that was important. It was not an elaborate thing. That sort of thing came later. The philosophy or underpinnings of the event came from a long-standing, very involved and engaged San Francisco underground history going back decades. Okay, we're influenced by the Suicide Club and Cacophony Society came out of a group called Communiversity, which is a free university movement in the 60s. And Communiversity was the whole idea was free. You'd exchange goods, ideas, classes, information for free. So it's a radical idea in a commodified culture. It's still a radical idea. And the initial culture that Burning Man came out of came from that directly. Later, there were a couple things that were quite important. Kerry Galbraith, who was one of the main organizers in Cacophony, came up with the concept of the zone trip. The idea was that the zone was a place you'd go, and anything could happen. You could go there and be enlightened. You could go there and maybe die. When we did the first zone trip, which was to L.A. in 88, we drove down. It was 3 o'clock in the morning. We stopped at a random spot that she just felt embodied the entryway to the zone. We stopped, drew a line in the dirt, and stepped across it. L.A.'s a weird enough place, but if you put that into your brain, it's like you're in an alien universe. The next 2.5-3 days were just like that. So Burning Man on the Desert was the fourth zone trip. We called it Bad Day at Black Rock Cacophony Society Zone Trip Number 4.
It's tempting to make a neat timeline of Burning Man's history, but the reality is messier and reflects a lot of collaboration. What became Burning Man started as a bonfire on Baker Beach, where Larry Harvey and some friends drank beer and burned a wooden effigy of a man, a stick figure, really. That became a summer solstice tradition. The term Burning Man didn't exist until 1988. And technically, that first year in the desert in 1990, that was not an event called Burning Man either. Cacophony Society had invited Larry Harvey to burn his wooden effigy at their zone trip event. That's after the cops stopped him from torching it on Baker Beach. And that's how Burning Man and the rest of us ended up at the Black Rock Desert.
We drove out 100 feet on the playa, drew a line in the dirt, stepped over it, then got into our vehicles. There were about 30 people, and we drove out randomly to a point out in the middle of nowhere.
So I guess what I'm curious about is, whether it's Cacophony Society or whatever, what's gluing you guys together?
Elena Fronte, who was one of the major organizers of the Suicide Club, earliest iteration, was in the 70s, and you know, she said, yeah, you can find a guy in any bar in town, but finding a real weirdo is difficult, really difficult, because there was no online forum. You know, if you're interested in transbachelian swallows and their flight patterns, right, you're never going to find another person who's interested in that. With the internet, you'll find 100 of them, almost guaranteed, or maybe 50 of them, okay? But in 1977, you couldn't. There was no way to connect with people. So when you ran into a person who wanted to do odd stuff, who was willing to take these risks, who saw the world saw the environment as a playground, that was a special thing. You found a special person.
Concurrently, something else was emerging that ultimately changed Burning Man and, well, civilization as we know it. It's called the World Wide Web.
By that time, Burning Man and other cacophony events and other stuff in general was starting to break out and to become cultural memes, which we didn't understand at the time, because of our proximity to the rise of the internet culture right here in the Bay Area. And by the time that stuff busted out, it just happened to be that we were the people next to the Silicon Valley doing all these weird events, Burning Man being the, you know, the 800-pound gorilla in the room, and it blew up because of that, like really blew up because of that. And in particular, Burning Man became the sanctioned corporate vacation for Silicon Valley over time, because it started out with the real interesting folks who were really exploring culture, who would go to, you know, to this early iteration of Burning Man and really trip out, oh my God, like you, I mean, trip out on it, like this is great. And then invite all their friends who were in tech, and the corporations realized, oh wow, this is really valuable. And like all throughout history, you know, it's very important for control to have a sanctioned vacation that all their workers can go to and get naked, paint themselves blue, drop acid, f*** somebody they just met for a week, and then go back to work in their cubicle for the rest of the year.
So how did we get from there to here? And what does John think about what's become of Burning Man? Go to theintersection.fm to hear the rest of that story, or subscribe to the Intersection podcast on your podcast player.